Habib.
I'm stunned. I really am stunned by... I'm old enough to be from that generation, and that you're sort of in the whole many generations after me, and it's just like, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I find it fascinating that you have made a study of basically the life that I lived.
I thought.
And I never studied it.
Your history.
Your history. Chronicles.
So the question I have for you is, how much of this have you actually lived and experienced?
Oh, yes, that's a good question. And I always like people asking me about that. I've been like in different like love relationships with women, international. So I had the opportunity to meet different people. And I traveled. Like, I like traveling. This is part, the trip I'm doing from New York to here is part of what I'm living. And I like to travel not as a teacher, not as someone who works with an official dogmatic institution, the university or the school, where you have to respect your headmaster, your dean, your director, everyone. I get rid of all those kind of costumes, and I wear my shorts and t-shirts and my backpack. And I go just, you know, be on the road, don't think where we are going to sleep. Don't think what you are going to eat. Don't think if someone is trying to kill you, just be there. So this happened. I walked, when I got to, I went to like Europe all over, like doing car share, you know, from Madrid to Paris, and from Paris crossing France, through Switzerland, to Italy, like Florence, Bologna, Venice, and so on. And I hitchhiked from Istanbul for a month all the way to Syria. Stopped by, that's when the fight started, I think 4 years now ago, it's 4 years. That summer when we wanted to cross with a teacher of French, who's my friend, we wanted to cross to Halab, Aleppo. They said, no, if you cross there, you are going to get killed. And we don't want to assume the responsibility for what you do. So they stopped, already they stopped the trains between Adana and Hatay. So it's Antakya, what do you call that? Yeah, the name. It's Hatay, Halab. So Halab was the closest, I think, city there. So they stopped the trains and they said, you can go there hitchhiking, but we don't want to assume the responsibility. So what we did, we went close to the borders and we just saw the, like, what's going on there. And we took another train to Kayseri, which is close to Diyarbakır, where the Kurds, Kurdistan, so the Kurds are based and concentrated. So nobody goes there because they are afraid of getting killed. But while hitchhiking, all the people, we were trying to avoid, you know, running into the Kurds, because every Turk was telling us, oh, you have to be aware, the Kurds will, something wrong may happen there. And we've tried to avoid the Kurds. And we discovered that all the people who picked us up from the road were the Kurds. And we said, okay, and they played their own music in the car, and then they danced, and they drank. It's Ramadan, and they still drink. And we didn't want to offend anyone. We were doing Ramadan, and the Kurd, the father and the son, he worked in Germany in the 80s. So he said, I'm very open. Do you want the Coke? And I said, look at my friend, we're doing Ramadan. They're supposed to be doing Ramadan, the same thing. He said, anyways, when you are in Turkey, do as the Turkish people do. So we grabbed that Coke and we put it in our own bags and we carried on with them. And we started talking about, what do you think about Turks? They didn't understand any languages. So we were mixing Arabic, French, and English, and Berber, and gestures, trying to, you know, to communicate with them. So I did this and then took a train to Konya, where Rumi is buried. His shrine is still there. So people come, you can, your backpack, you stop by, you get into the shrine, you meet other people, you sleep, you pray, whatever you want to do. And next morning you continue your road, be on the road again. So we stopped there in Konya and it was a very hot day. I remember we washed our clothes in by the road, there is a, what do you call that? There is a, you can just go and...
Laundromat.
Yeah, so people, farmers, they bring their own like carpets and everything on trucks, and they stop by and they wash in there. So we while waiting for someone to pick us from the road, we stopped by and my friend said, I think this is, it's hot, it's 50 degrees today. So we can have a shower here and we can wash our clothes. And that's what we did basically. We showered there and then we washed our clothes and we put them there while waiting for the bus or someone to come to pick us. So from there, we continued. So we went through every little village along the, you know, we crossed from Istanbul, took a train to Eskişehir, and then Mula, Aydin, Izmir, Marmaris, Bodrum, and Fethiye, Antalya, Analia, Adana, Mersin. So every little village, we crossed that, like sleeping wherever, in the gas stations, with the imams, if we stopped by to pray, and then they invite us to their place, like what happened in Kars. Kars is where Erdogan is from, Kars. He studied in Imam Khatibi school. So he is an imam, and he's a khatib, someone who can like talk to the people on the day, Friday, so the prayer. So we stopped in his town. We prayed Al-Asr in a small mosque. And we were thinking of going to the next village where they have some very kind of historical monuments. So we went back again to pray Maghrib, and we were doing Ramadan. And the imam was wearing his jeans and his t-shirt, and I thought, he said, what are you doing? We don't speak Turkish, and they don't speak Arabic, and no other languages. So we said, Ramadan, oh, we are doing Ramadan. So we are drinking our things inside the mosque with our backpacks and everything. So he said, are you staying here for the night? If you stay to pray Tarawih, I'm inviting you. Do you have a hotel? We said, no, we just arrived here. We said, stay. And I was wearing my shorts. So I went to the bathrooms and I changed my shorts and I wore my long trousers. And I got into the mosque and we prayed with them. And they pray in a different way because it's a madhab al-Hanbali, Hanafi, and we have al-Maliki. So when we pray Tarawih, we wait twice and then we do tahiyyat and then we say salam alaikum. For them, no, it's four and then they do it. So we start thinking, my friend and I, looking at him, what he's doing. And that was a fabulous experience. So this is the way I like to travel. Meet the people. And always be ready to convert, always be converting and, you know, be able to convert and convert it. So this is the way I think about it. I ended up in this Shambhala Mountain Center. I am a Muslim and I prayed with the Buddhists inside the stupa where the guy who started Shambhala Mountain Center is buried. And you have a big statue of Buddha. The thing is, reach out for the people. Share what they think, sympathize, empathize, feel good with them, and your own appropriate ways of thinking, they remain yours. Just don't try to impose them, share that good moment, and that's fine. So we went to Kars and then crossed to Georgia, continued again, 500 kilometers from the borders. We wanted to go to Iran, we didn't get the visa, and we got through, and you know, Turkey, Armenia, Iran. So we wanted to go to Armenia. There are no trains to stop the transport. So you can't cross to Armenia. You have to go through Georgia and then cross from a small village to go to Armenia. So we went to Tbilisi and then we hitchhiked again back and we got through that village and we went to a small village in Armenia. You know, fabulous landscapes, churches, all, you know, from medieval times, and it's fabulous. So, and then we took a train from Kars, 2 days and a half on a train. Very slow train. We crossed along the Mediterranean and then we went along the Black Sea, Ankara, and then back to Istanbul, Casablanca, and then Morocco for a month and 2 weeks.
Did that answer your question there?
I think, I'm sorry. Yeah. So I'm doing this. It's part of my life. Try to get connected to people, talk to the people. Don't just read your book and sit next to them and then you don't give a damn what they are thinking or what they feel. Try to reach out to them, share that moment, take your train somewhere else, take your bus somewhere else. This is what I did. And I've never run into any kind of problems with the people. I have my backpack, just sleep everywhere, my sleeping bag, meet friends. I may spend the night with the homeless and next morning I'm speaking at the University of Complutense, next morning in Madrid. And I don't mind that. This is the real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have a couple questions right here.
I think this is really fascinating because you were just asking about your generation and how our generation is studying your generation. Yeah. And it really makes me think about, well, what's the next generation going to study when they study us? Mm. And this, I'm a young poet as well, and this is something that's happening in the world of poetry. I think that young poets are very upset and restless about the fact that poetry has been sort of caged in universities and taken away from the people and just been, you know, hoarded by the elite and the people keep being told, you know, poetry isn't for you, you won't understand it, it's too over your head, this is for us, this is like opera, this is like fine dining, and we're like, no, the poetry has always belonged to the people and it deserves to be in the hands of people again. And I've done similar travels as a poet. I've traveled up and down the East Coast. I've read at the Bread and Puppet Theater in Vermont. I did Europe. I read at Stonehenge during the Summer Solstice Festival. I gave reading last night in Seattle on a sailboat. And I think that it's poetry is definitely finding its way, trickling back down through the cracks, and there are a lot of young traveling poets that feel the same way. You hitchhike, you pray, you eat what you're given, you sleep where you can, and the important thing is to keep the poetry, keep spreading the poetry. And so my question, is how feasible is Morocco right now for receiving, say, young traveling poets and artists and people who are interested in going and would be interested in visiting and setting things up for themselves?
Yeah, I think it's, as I said, Morocco is, I think of it always as being one of the most maybe progressive and liberal countries in North Africa and Middle East. So we have this diversity, you know, people from all over the world. And there are centers for people who are interested in learning Arabic, classical Arabic. And of course, they are run by Americans and Moroccans, maybe sometimes French and other people from different parts of the world. So they teach classical Arabic, they teach poetry, they teach everything, and they welcome other people who are interested in joining. There is an artist in residence house in Marrakesh. The guy who runs this, he's a friend of mine, and we happened to meet at Naropa University, which has been invited to for the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics, you know, creative writing summer program. So he is the one who invites also people there. So you have your place to live. It's close to the High Atlas Mountains in the valley, Orica. And you have access to a big library, so because they brought all these things from the States, you know, a very rich American couple settled in Marrakesh. They started real estate, Riyadh, and so on. So they are supporting the local artist in residence programs there, and this is the first national big center there. It's called Dar Al Mamun. Mamun is one of the Al Amin wal Mamun from the Abyssinian era. That was the first big library in Arab world, you know, in Arabia, which was started by Al Amin wal Mamun, Bayt al Hikmah, which is the house of wisdom. You've heard of the House of Wisdom, so anyways, Al-Amin wal-Ma'mun. So this house is called Dar al-Ma'mun, the House of al-Ma'mun, who was one of the caliphates, okay, part of, you know, Abyssinian time. So these people, they support artists, translators, so you can come work on a book from maybe French, English, Arabic, English, or vice versa. So you can always do this. And there is a Masna in Casablanca. Masna, which is the manufacturer, where you work on your own things. One of my friends, Ambrose Bai, the son of Anne Waldman, he was invited for a week, just a week, 2 weeks, it depends. So he was there, an artist in residence, music, playing with people from Egypt, Tunisia, the States, France, wherever. They stay there, they eat, they live in that place, and they work. So there are two big, and there is the American Legacy Museum in Tangier. So they also support these programs. And I know the woman and the American guy who also runs this. So yeah, there are many different opportunities if you look for, you know, for this.
How about in Agadir? Anyone in Agadir we should look at?
Agadir, there is the American Language Center. Yeah, if you want to get an opportunity, like as a teacher of English with the American Language Center, you have to have a master's degree, maybe in TEFL, teaching English as a foreign language. So this is one institute. They are all over the country. Marrakesh, Agadir, Tangier, Tetouan, Casablanca.
I think we have one more question. And
please.
Then we can make it informal.
Okay.
We have some refreshments here. I'm curious of your background, your parents. What did they do and how did you grow up?
Yeah, so that's also a very important question. My parents are illiterate. My mother does not know how to write her name or read the numbers. My father does. And we grew up in a small village surrounded by anti-Atlas mountains, Har Atlas mountains. So we are farmers. And my parents didn't have the chance to go to school because of the post-independence thing. So everything was destabilized in so many ways. So my grandfather died in 1962, and he was married to my grandmother when she was 14, and he was 30 years old. So she remained a widow for her whole life, from the 1962 up to now, and she is 85 years old. So my father had to take care of my aunt, my grandmother, and my uncle. So he didn't have time to go to school. And when he got married to my mother, we didn't have schools in my hometown, and there were no ways to go to the next city. So I grew up in this city, but my father and my mother and everyone in my family have been very supportive. My father used to buy books from the street without knowing what language they are written in. And he brings them back home, and I say, this is not English, this is not Arabic, this is not French, this is German, and I don't speak German. And he said, anyways, I just found these books, you might be interested, and I bought them. So keep them somewhere. I had, like Najib Mahfouz, I had Lutfi, I had some books in my house, which were, you know, bought by my father, and he doesn't know what they are about. Alf Lila Wa Lila, 1001 Nights, also was there. That was the big volume I found there, Tom. And so they were very supportive. My father and my mother, my grandmother and everyone. I'm the only male of the family. So I have six female cousins and I have four sisters. And I'm the only one who managed to get this job. And they don't know what I'm doing, basically. They are very happy when they receive like a newspaper where I'm published, oh, it's his translation, and they ask my sisters in high school to read for them what's going on there. And they don't understand classical Arabic. They may understand what is Palestine and then Palestine and then this and that, but they don't understand what I'm basically doing. So, yeah, that's how, but they were very supportive. And up to now, they paid for my books, my rent, my clothes, everything, until I started this teaching position in 2009. So I've been working for 5 years.
So a couple of quick announcements. First of all, the Subud International Cultural Association has helped to get Habib here and get up to his next steps. So we're grateful to SICA.
Thank you.
Same Office of Arts and Cultural Affairs, as well as the co-sponsor of this. Details at splab.org. Tomorrow night, Habib is going to be doing the featured reading at the Wedgwood Ale House. That starts at 8:30. Sign up. Also has open mic. And he'll be the feature. He'll be reading there. It's on 85th, around 35th Northeast and 85th Wedgwood Ale House. And then on Tuesday, midday, Habib and I will be leaving for the North Cascades. And on Wednesday morning, first thing in the morning, 6 a.m.,
yeah.
We're going to go up to, with my Achilles tendonitis, we're going to get up to the top of Desolation Peak, where Jack Kerouac was a fire lookout in 1956. So we're going to go to the top of that.
Right. Look forward to it.
Exquisite corpse or something, or have a cup of tea. And then he'll be speaking at the North Cascades Institute on Thursday night, so we got to get the boat back. You rent a water taxi on Ross Lake, and it's $105 from Lightning Creek to where you can go to your car. So he'll be speaking Thursday night, then leaving Friday morning. So I just wanted to get some of those housekeeping things. We're going to have a little party afterwards here. Habib will hang around for a bit. Hadija is having her birthday today. Hadija, the woman who's going to the kitchen,
birthday.
Is turning 70 today, so we'll have to sit here and think about it. So
there's cupcakes over there to celebrate her birthday.
So, a great thanks, Hadija, for coming.
Thank
here
you so much.
And sharing some of your work.
Thank you so much, Francis, for coming. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for
Thank you so much for coming.
I like your reference in your poem, Ishvan Carpet.
Ah, yeah.
I have an Ishvan.
You love it?
Well, yeah, I've been to Turkey.
Great.
See, I left this country when I was 11. I grew up in Paris. Mm-hmm. I went to a French school. Was it Berman Coach Francais?
Great.
Ah, you parle français.
Ah, okay, je parle français aussi. Je l'avais. J'ai commencé à apprendre le français depuis quand j'étais 7 ans.
7 ans.
7 years old.
Non, je suis 11 ans.
Yeah.
Attendez, école française pour un an.
Ah non, seulement pour un an.
And then, American school.
Okay, ça, ce n'est pas suffisant. It's not enough.
No. But I lived over there for 7 years.
You understand que vous voulez. Je comprends quand les gens parlent.
Je comprends. Je parle pas. Okay.